In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey, Jim Hoffman here for EMS Office Hours. This segment, we talked a little bit about complacency in EMS, frequent flyers, and how the non-emergent calls that we do more often than those emergent calls sort of have the numbing effect on the EMS providers. So take a listen to myself, Josh Knapp, and Dave Brenner as we discuss this topic, and be sure to listen to the end on how to get a free new oxygen wrench.
The thing I want to talk about here is something that, I don't know, what your guys' take is on this or not, or if you have an opinion on it or not.
Us have an opinion?
Yeah,
how dare
I know.
You? I never have an opinion. No.
Yeah. But this thing with, you know, you join EMS and you're expecting the lights and sirens, and you're expecting, you know, these life and death emergencies.
The accolades.
Yeah, all that stuff, the hero stuff. No, but you're expecting, you know, the traumatic calls and the CPR and the chest pains and all these life and death, you know, calls that you train for. You're in EMT school, right? You're in paramedic school, and you're learning all this stuff, and you know, you're like, wow, I can do so much out there. There's so much information I have and so much knowledge that I have. And then you get out there and you start to realize, I think pretty quickly, that a lot of the calls we do aren't really an emergency, right? At least not for us. It might be an emergency for the people that called. It might be an emergency for the family that called. But for us and what we're trained to do and what we can do, it tends to be more of a, you know, a taxi ride, you know, to the hospital. They're looking for a way to get to the hospital. They don't know who else to turn to. They don't have a way to get there. Or sometimes they do have a way to get there. They just feel that taking the ambulance is going to be faster somehow, right? And that's something you see sort of, I guess, running through the veins of EMS, is that sort of commentary of us being, you know, taxi drivers and non-emergent calls and people abusing the system and things like that. But I wonder, when we're dealing with that as providers, you know, at some point, do we ourselves sort of start falling into that trap of treating every call as if it's just a taxi ride, you know, where you get to the call and unless it's screaming at you that there's really something going on, that's life and death, you sort of just blow it off as, you know, this is just another taxi ride, just transport to the hospital. You know, grandma needs to get down the stairs. They don't know how to get it down the stairs, or this one doesn't have a car, they have to get to the hospital. This one's just abusing me because they want to bypass the ED waiting room, get to the back. And we sort of get numb to what could be going on with our patients, and we sort of start taking shortcuts with assessments and shortcuts with vital signs, you know.
Do you think that are you sort of getting along the line that adds to our general burnout?
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, to me, I've always thought that burnout in EMS isn't because we're doing all these trauma calls and all these cardiac arrests. The burnout is because you're doing these mundane, you know, calls where you're driving the ambulance to the hospital, driving the ambulance back to the garage or to your response area, you know, and it's just this constant back and forth sort of, you know, existence, you know. And then you get that legit call where you're like almost, oh, holy shit, I gotta do what I'm trained to do here. And it's almost like a surprise, you know, and it takes you 10, 15 seconds to say, okay, this is what I'm here for. And now I gotta, you know, snap out of it, mm-hmm. You know? And I wonder, like, if that is really, you know, something, that crying wolf that we get from so many of the people that call 911, if that's, you know, sort of
but I don't think it's just 911. I mean, I had a situation the other night, and it was quite telling. My hospital does, and as many EMS organizations do, they do standbys for large parties and things like that. And, you know, at the end of this, the coordinator, the contact for the organizational event came out and said, hey, you know, we have a guest here who needs to get to another area of the city. Would you mind bringing them there? Like, you have nothing better to do. All you do is drive that big box all day.
Right.
Would you just bring? Yeah. And I'm literally, and, you know, at first it was okay. It was just inappropriate. But then I started to really start to think about the chain of the chain of breakdown in logic that would lead an adult who is theoretically responsible enough to run a high, highly visible party for an organization. That type of person would think of us as, hey, can you give these people a ride to the other end of town?
Yeah.
I mean, you just got to stop and say, are they that entitled? Is it really a them versus us, or is it?
It's that. I don't know if they feel entitled, or if because it's almost like, well, I got nothing to lose by asking.
Well, they could have asked you to groom his toes, trim the toenails.
You know what? I've gotten a call like that, Dave. So before you start like saying that is the most outrageous thing you could think of, you know.
Well, it's not.
Remember, 911, right? I've transported paper cuts. You know, I've had people jump out because they made up some.
Are you angry about that? Are you angry about transporting a paper cut?
Am I angry about transporting a paper cut? Not uh-huh. angry about it.
You sound
I don't
angry.
Think. No, I'm just making a
Jim,
point
does
with
he
my
sound
voice.
Angry?
Yes. He sounds very angry. Yeah. I'd be angry. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'd be.
Did
angry
I start using four-letter words?
Not yet.
No, not yet. No, but I'm trying to. I'm trying to make a point using my voice. So mm-hmm. maybe if I just calm down.
You're enunciating with passion.
I'm enunciating with passion, as I've been known to do. Sometimes I'll add to the vocabulary words that you generally don't find in most dictionaries.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I don't know. It's hard. Listen, you talk about grown men. It's like I sometimes sit in the emergency room. One of the emergency rooms that I go to, it's a big window, and you sit there, you can do your paperwork, and you sit there and you type away your little computer and make your comments and finish up your paperwork. And if you look out the window, you see the other ambulance crews coming in with their patients. And I look at these people in the stretchers. I'm like, he didn't need an ambulance. He didn't need an ambulance. She didn't need an ambulance. They're just sitting on the stretcher looking around, like nothing's wrong, no distress, just sitting there, la, la, la. You know, I needed an ambulance. They came and got me. And I'm like, these are like grown people. These are adults that you got to say to yourself, where is the breakdown in their head that gives them this green light to say, you know, I'll just call 911 and I'll go to the hospital because I've got a sore throat, or, you know, my tummy hurts me a little bit more today than it did the past 2 weeks. You know,
or I need the excuse, hey, an ambulance came and took me away, so I'm really sick when I call.
Oh, my God. You say that, Josh, and this is something that just happened a few weeks ago. I went there with a guy. He was like in his early 20s, and the mother comes with us, and we get to the hospital, and he's got some just mundane complaint. I forget what the hell it was, but she comes out, and before we even left, I'm finishing the paperwork. I'm standing there. And she asked the nurse, is there a way he can get a doctor's note for his job tomorrow? You know, he's not even out. He's only been not in the ER for like 10 minutes, you know. And he's already looking to you know, not go to work. Which goes back to what we talked about earlier about calling in sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know. But it's just, I feel like it starts to numb us as providers when we deal with this on a regular basis.
So
and
what percentage of your calls are like that, Jim?
90.
Wow. Josh?
With absolute nonsense?
Yes.
I think that Jim is adding a little sarcasm to the 90%.
No, 90%. Can I find something wrong with people, or can I sit there and in my documentation document appropriately to justify them calling an ambulance? Yes.
Oh, that's a scary thought.
Wait. Why would billing. You justify? So who cares about billing? Let them pay for it.
It's my own self-worth.
Yeah, but you know, from a billing aspect, Dave, we don't have to justify their need. We just
I certainly don't. We don't bill at all. They're
yeah, but even if you even if you billed, you don't have to justify their need for an ambulance. In fact, you would be the biggest part of this. You'd never write something down that wasn't there. So if somebody's calling an ambulance because of a paper cut, you know.
Yeah, that's what you have to write down.
You'd write down. Paper cut. Sure. Right, exactly.
But the problem is that when you look at your sometimes you look at your EPCR, the choices of the primary complaint doesn't have paper cut, it has hemorrhaging. And then that's what you end up having to choose.
But then you get to describe and that, it as a paper thin.
Yes, and you pray to God that somebody's reading your comments and sees that, you know, it's a paper cut, you know.
Yeah, I got to tell you, 90% is like a scary high number. I mean, you know, from my point of view, I think I'm somewhere down at 1%.
No. That don't need an ambulance?
Right.
I don't know what land you live in. I'm not sure. Yeah, I honestly
I've worked in several different areas, you know, New York City, upstate New York, New Jersey, now here, two different areas here in North Carolina, and it's the same shit wherever I go. It's definitely not 1% of people do not need an ambulance. Is 90% maybe exaggerating?
Josh is exploding.
I could be exaggerating at 90%, but at this, I'm going to say this, Dave. You know what? I try not to become numb to the nonsense. I try not to become numb to it because it does end up putting you at risk of, you know, losing your job, hurting a patient, you know, things like that. I mean, listen, I give an example. A couple weeks ago, I had just some guy in the street, and he was knocking door to door, and he's trying to say his family lives there, things like that. And, you know, we get there, and the fireman, well, we had him earlier today. He's at the women's shelter. He thought it was the men's shelter, but now he's knocking these people's door. All right, gets in the ambulance. I'm talking to him. And he's you know, alert, and he's talking. He's giving me information, but he's just something a little off with the guy. You know, and at first I'm like, okay, this is just some guy's been drinking too much. He's homeless and he's just losing his mind or whatever, you know. But, you know, what do I do on the way to hospital? I check his sugar, you know, and it was friggin' sky high, you know. So
lucky for
had
him.
I not, now listen, there's not much I can do for him out in the ambulance, right? With high sugar, start an IV, maybe get some fluids going for the guy. Right.
Right.
But we get to the hospital. My partner's like looking at me like, what the hell happened back here? When he left, he's like, this was just a ride to the hospital. I said, yeah, probably. And then on the way to the hospital, I get the IV and all that stuff, and I get the fluids going, and we open the back door. He's like, what the hell happened back here? You know, on the way to the hospital.
He got lucky.
And I said to him,
yeah, you.
I said, listen. I said, you know what? If I didn't check it, and then it turns out that the guy's got a diabetic history and he's low sugar or high sugar, I look like I'm not doing my job.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think this is where I think when we talk about people that call for every little bitty reason and us being numb to it, we can't be numb to it because we have to still do our assessment, because that's when you don't do the assessment and you don't start thinking a little bit outside the box. I'm not talking about zebra hunting because I hate doing that. I hate people that zebra hunt. But you have to do basic assessment and basic diagnostic tools that you have available to you to ensure that it is indeed the nonsense, that 90% or whatever that I'm trying to say, or whatever percentage you want to give it of nonsense calls, that they are in, that it is indeed just a transfer to the hospital. And at that point, you know what? All you are is listening to somebody, expressing what they're telling you to the nurse that you're going to transfer them to, and then you've done your job at that point. You know, there's not a whole hell of a lot more you can do. No,
but you're talking about a couple of different things all at once. You're talking about the level.
Get closer.
Well, you must have You
must have lowered my volume there on the controls when I was trying to outshout you, Jim.
Oh.
But I was going to say that. Oh, yeah, that was it. I was going to say that, Dave, you know, Dave, I got to call you on that. 99% of your ambulance calls are legit and the patient needs to go to the hospital by ambulance. I think that's a little bit too idealistic of your calls. I don't think you're looking close enough if I might go that far.
Maybe.
You know, because just the law of percentages would say, you know, that there's got to be 20% that has...
We don't have that law out here.
Yeah, obviously. at least I've been out. Yeah, but I've been out there. The law of gravity still holds.
Yes, the law of gravity.
The law of property definitions.
We approved that one.
Right.
Yeah.
You may live by the beach, but you can't access the beach. Well, that's a different law. Those are out there. But
yeah, that's out here too.
Yeah.
Not,
yes.
Not in my town because we're not near the beach. But I know what you're talking about.
Yes. But
whether it's
so.
1% or 5%, and whether or not they need an ambulance, their perception that they need an ambulance or their abuse of us because they know they don't need an ambulance, we're just easier. I think Jim is right. We got to treat them like they need an ambulance because you never know. And for those that are abusing us, it's what I tell my students, and I've said it here a million times, I would rather treat them for 20 minutes than be them for a second. So
that may be
true. It's easier to treat them. Everybody I take to the hospital, I know I did the right thing. And, you know, I don't need to. And you know what? I'm going to tell you, this is the most annoying part. The people that I think are abusing me, I am so nice to them. I asked them about the position that there. Is this comfortable for you? Would you like another blanket? I'm going to need to take your blood pressure again, because if I got nothing to do for them, I'm taking their blood pressure 3 or 4 times because I got nothing else to do. And they don't know what to make of that. I know who they are. I know who the people are that you're talking about. And I am so nice to them that they
but Dave, don't
apologize.
You find that, but don't you find that almost an insult, Dave? Like they...
I feel like bad for them that they need to do this to somebody, that they need to be a burden on society. I have some people.
Yeah, but they don't feel bad. They could care less.
I feel bad for them.
It's like it's almost see to me sometimes I feel like when you're too nice to these to people that abuse. I mean, I'm talking about blatant abuse.
Don't
right?
feed them. They'll come back.
Right.
Well, that's like right. That's like Josh said. It's almost like you get that dog or that cat. You feed it. It's coming back. Right. If you're so nice to them and you do this and you do all these things for them, they're gonna be like, "Wow, I called the ambulance. They did all this stuff for me.
Yep.
You know, I'm gonna call again because they really kissed my ass.
Maybe.
You know. Yeah. I mean, I've had patients that were nonsense who said to me, "You know, the last guy started an IV. Oh, the last guy gave me this medicine.
Start
the last
the
guy
IV.
Did this.
Hey, you know I don't mean? Have a problem with that.
Yeah, but then you're talking about, listen, you can, I mean, listen, even with that, start an IV. You're starting IV, somebody doesn't need it. You're putting yourself at risk for a finger stick.
I'm not going to start it.
You know, an exposure, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, Dave, like you just said about taking full blood pressures, you've got asshole providers out there who will start an IV and somebody doesn't need it because they're aggravated. With
as a punishment?
Yes.
Oh no.
And there was a big thing when I worked in Brooklyn with this homeless guy that we had that would call every day, and he wasn't a nasty homeless guy or a nasty drunk, but when word got out that the medics got there because he was complaining of chest pain, they stuck him with 16 gauge needles and all this stuff, and really it was like a big uproar. Because the rest of us that, yeah, we didn't like getting called to the corner for this guy every day. But at the same time, we knew that it wasn't appropriate
to be
abused
this guy. Right?
More or less,
to get
food to get out of the cold, the rain, exactly.
How sad is that? How sad is that? You know. Is that we can't take care of a guy like that? How sad
yeah.
is that? We, you know, this country.
I mean, until right, and well, that's the thing. Until
they're part of the takers.
They are.
Until we have a better, I don't know, I guess a better resource for these people, you know, I can understand. Yes, do I like going to get these drunks that are out in the street? No. But I can understand them because they are cold, they are drunk, they you know what
we
I mean?
We need an alternative for them.
I can understand them requesting 911 more than I can the guy that's in the townhouse that calls because, you know, his throat hurts and, you know, he just can't take anymore because he can't sleep and he expects some miracle pills to be presented to him at the emergency department.
I really have to stop for a second because I'm sort of broiling a little bit on, you know, Dave saying, you know, they are. And I know, and you know that this would happen because I think this whole, you know, we get into it without getting too deep in politics or even really just skirting. We've gotten into this whole world of people who are takers of society. And therefore, they're using our resources unfairly. They don't contribute to society. And then, you know, we go all the way up to the job creators, which is, again, a big hunk of bullshit. We cannot look at these people as takers. As any society, we are, as part of our responsibility to each other, we pool our resources and we take care of those who cannot take care of themselves. So instead of labeling these people in these political terms like takers, why don't we recognize them for who they are? They're people who have fallen on hard times. You know, but Jim, for real, if we do that, we resent them. And many times...
Yeah, but the problem is, Josh, is when you talk about, you know, the takers and givers and stuff like that, is yes, as a society, we do owe it to people to help them.
We owe it to us all, everybody in society. That's why we link
can't
together.
Help, because they can't help themselves, you know, I get that, and we should be doing that. But there has to be a point of, you know, when are you going to help yourself?
Some people
am
don't
I
help, have...
Am I helping you forever?
You know what? What do you do know, for
am
the
I
person?
Helping you, am I helping you forever, or when are you going to help yourself? I've helped you. I've helped you for 5 years stand up and go get something to eat. I helped you for 5 years do this. Right. For 10 years.
And what if they're not able?
Are you going to do something on the, when the 11th
the answer
year
is
comes,
never.
Going to do something?
No. The answer is no. The answer is no. So the answer to you as a society or a participant in the society is thankfully you have the ability to provide for more than yourself.
Well, what happens is that we just deal with the burden and we make it okay
but
for everybody else.
But the burden is unfairly
not to
spread
themselves.
Amongst certain members of our
so
society.
So we help everybody else go ahead and we just give the green light for everybody else.
And are you
else
talking about
that.
Foreign aid now?
What do you mean
we help everybody else? Well, you know, if you have somebody who's brain injured, who's traumatically brain injured, or maybe not even traumatically, just congenitally brain injured, they will never add to society.
That's a different story.
How is that a different story?
Because that person never had the opportunity to help themselves.
Okay, so what should we do with the guy who fell on hard times, became addicted to a substance? Is as for nothing
which
better
is a choice.
Alcohol.
Which is the choice.
Some people say it's not a choice, but
he spent money on alcohol
instead of
money on
that's
a house.
It. And
or
that led to his downfall to a point where he can no longer have an avenue where he could contribute to society. Or may psychologically. So what should we do? Take him out back and shoot him?
You know what?
No, I'm not.
I gotta jump in here. This the social work part of this discussion is not going to be solved here in any amount of time.
Well,
but
nothing
I think what we
say
need,
is going to
we,
be solved here. But go ahead.
Well, we need some. Yeah, exactly. But I think we can come away with a strategy or at least a philosophy and an idea that as an EMT or a paramedic, I can put it in my pocket that when I'm confronted with this, that I do a better job for if not to help the person who I believe doesn't need help, at least to help me so I don't come away burnt out with the expectation that the next person is going to be like this and then I won't recognize something serious when I see it. So,
yes.
So I think really, Josh, that's where Jim was going with this, And then we try to solve the problems of the world, which I don't think we're going to do.
No, we don't. We're just trying to understand and maybe not taint our vocabulary with words that will make us even more resentful. And that's what I'm saying. If we view these people in a certain lens, Dave, and say that they are a drain on society and, you know, shame on them, then shame on us. Because wherever they are at that point in time, and we don't necessarily know how they got there or what their life story is, they are there then and we are there.
Right.
Well, that's something, too. I mean, I often tell, listen, I sit in the ambulance sometimes and I have a partner sometimes and you know, your partner starts preaching to the patient about being an alcoholic, about doing this and getting help. And you know what? We're not solving that person's problem, you know. And you're not going to jump up on your soapbox and start trying to change that person.
Have you ever bought a cup of coffee or a sandwich for a frequent flyer, Jim?
Yes.
No.
Dave has.
Let me ask you something. Do you have the phone number for Adult Protective Services in your wallet? I have it.
I haven't. I have most of those phone numbers on my phone. But,
that's good. Do we use them? Do we give them out to these folks that are in need of this? Do we... You know, the community paramedic strategy, perhaps some of these folks need to be addressed in that, not just the people coming home from surgery where the hospital has a liability. How about just the fact that there are people out there? We know that they're out there. I got the village in the woods in Holbrook where people are living in cardboard boxes. How about going there just to check on them, you know, to say to them, hey, how you doing there? Instead of waiting until they call us because they're starving and they're going to tell me they're having chest pain.
And I think, Dave, you know what? I think that's an element of EMS that doesn't get utilized, you know, where we have that ability, since we're mobile, to go around and to do that type of thing, to avoid the emergency room visit, to avoid the severe, you know, illness. You know, whether it's, like you said, these people that are out in the street or the elderly woman that doesn't know how to turn the heat on or forgets to turn it on because they can't regulate their temperature. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, that's something that we should be doing as a profession, you know, to elevate us to more than just the ambulance driver, you know. But I think, goes back to, it costs money and, you know, the additional training on recognizing, you know, long-term illnesses and things like that. And
we're at the beginning
being able to do things, Dave, like refer people to these resources and have this referral be taken seriously.
Guys,
I honestly think that a lot of these places that you call up and say, hey, this is EMT so-and-so. I got this guy here. He really needs help. You're going to get some on the other person, other end of the phone, who's going to hear the word EMT. They're going to translate that immediately to ambulance driver, and they're not going to take it seriously, you know, because we're not looked at that level of interaction with the communities that we're in. Our interaction begins and ends with going to the house and taking them to the hospital.
Listen, we're a budget line item. Don't ever get past that.
Yes, okay? And this is why we talked about earlier, we talked about that ambulance closing.
One end to the other over there, Josh.
I don't flip-flop at all. I haven't. My message is entirely constant, okay?
But, you know, but it goes back to what we said, though, about that company that got closed, because it was a line item thing.
Right.
Could they have been doing more for the community, maybe, to either...
Did the community understand everything they're doing for them is the other question.
Right. And you know, where a lot of these things that you talk about, when we talk about things like interceding before we have to act, like checking on people that are homeless or the elderly or the young and things like that, how getting to them before they have to go to the emergency department, before they have to go to long-term care, saves, you know, places money. It doesn't cost them money in the end. It saves them money more than it does the expense to go out there and reach out to these people, you know. But you've got so many elements involved, I think, that sort of get in the way, you know, when you get, you know, other unions and other elements and other professions that go, wait a minute, we do that. Wait a second, we can do that. Wait a minute. You know, everyone's got their goddamn hand out and got their foot in the door so that we can't say, we're willing to do it tomorrow,
and
right?
Sacred territory.
this community paramedic thing, right? You hear it more and more and more going on. Everyone's willing to do this tomorrow. But what's stopping it is other health professions that want to do the same thing. The money that's involved, that cost to do it. So we're willing to do it tomorrow. We don't need all this other hubbub that everybody else is right. trying to throw into it. But we're being hindered and limited doing it because it's not being embraced because of other elements, you know, other health professions, the insurance companies, the payment for those services. You know, so we flounder in it. You know, we plug away at it, but we don't get to the point where we can, you know, elevate ourselves as a profession and say, hey, yes, it's emergency medical services, but we also can do a lot more than that. You know, so to me, it's like, I almost want to say, you know what, if nobody wants us to do all these other things, then screw them and we'll just focus on the emergency part of what we do. So, and maybe we should do away with all this other stuff of trying to be all that we can be, you know, and focus on that one element that everybody sees us in instead of trying to do all this other stuff. You know, I mean, maybe that's the bigger answer, and focusing on what we do, what we're you know, what everyone sees us as, but, you know, and excel in that.
That will always be attached to money. I think we've lost that attachment to life-saving first responders the day we started having to bill for our services.
Well, oh yeah. Listen, okay. I've I know over 20 years I've seen how the paperwork that I did when I first started in EMS was so minimal and nobody gave a shit. So you wrote down the patient's name and their medications. That was all people really cared about. And then I'm at a point now where it's like a, you know what, 10-page report when you're all done, said and done, with check boxes and graphs and.
But we're
and,
gonna and, face you know, another paradigm.
And it's all and that paperwork is all geared towards billing. I talked to my partner the other day. I said, you know what it is that is the most frustrating part about the job? It's not really taking the patients back and forth to the hospital. It's all the goddamn paperwork you got to do when you're doing it. You know, paperwork that most people don't read unless something goes wrong.
Dave intimated it earlier when he said, you know, the change in Medicare, Medicaid, where hospitals won't be reimbursed for somebody coming back from a surgery the next day with complications. So there's this whole drive to not discharge people with complications, not discharge people with diseases they get and blah, blah, blah in the hospital. But what that the natural progression to that is the whole chain of custody that gets paid for. So what we're going to find that's going to start to happen is your insurance may not reimburse your ambulance ride to the hospital, because if they find that you went to the hospital and nothing was treated and you had no ailments, then what the hell are you taking an ambulance for? Why should we pay the $1,000 for the ride?
But you're still not. But then that cost is not being passed on to anybody except the ambulance companies. You know, they're the ones that are going to wind up fitting the bill for that, because the patients that call, you know, a lot of the people that call 911. I mean, I've heard them say they don't care who pays for the ambulance.
That's true. They don't care as long as it's you not know? Them.
Right, and they don't care because
the
you know,
unfortunate
they think,
part is that the responsible members of society who take something because they're scared are going to end up being footing the bill. But isn't that always the case? I mean, you know, the leading reason for bankruptcy in this country is medical bills. So we have a problem that's now starting to dip into our sacred world of step up to the cause, volunteer, and do the right thing, to you got to make dollars and cents reality over why are you transporting this person. So shouldn't that now, once you start not paying for a service or saying a service isn't going to be reimbursed because it wasn't necessary, as in your ambulance ride, isn't the next logical step from that to give power to the ambulance companies to say, we're not going to transport you because we don't think you have a legitimate reason?
No.
Yeah, but Yeah, but then you're gonna get into
You can't make somebody do something if you're not gonna pay them for it. That's one of the tenets of this wonderful country we're in. You don't pay me, you can't make me do it.
The only problem is, and you've heard this before, is that we're not trained to decide whether or not somebody needs an ambulance.
Ah.
You were never trained in that. You were trained.
That's very true. I'm not disagreeing with you, but there would be pushback. As soon as you say to a organization that stems from, if you call We Haul for any reason, no worries, okay, to you're not going to get paid if you pick up the wrong person, whoa. Now you're going to have people who are screaming, I can't stay in business that way.
That's why you want a municipal system. The one that the other Peoria.
Our municipal system bills, for crying out loud. The FDNY, they bill.
Yeah.
You get an ambulance bill. So, you know, at what point? I'm just saying that, you know, I'm just pointing out. I'm not really giving you an answer here, obviously. I'm just pointing out the inconsistencies in this argument of saying, oh, we won't bill, we won't pay, you know, you have to transport under any conditions. The whole thing breaks down as soon as you put a little stress on the system.
Sure.
Just saying.
Somebody's got to pay, because if we're not doing it for free, and it can't be done, and it cannot be done for free, somebody's got to pay for it. There is no mandate that, Josh, that you or me or anybody else go into this field.
That's very true.
So when somebody decides to run an ambulance company or run a bodega or run a pharmacy, they do so often not only because they love it, but they want to make money. And somewhere along the way, somebody's got to make money on this. You can be sure that all of the equipment that we use and all the supplies that we use, somebody's making money on those.
Yeah, I'm going to venture.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're not getting the, you know, everyone looks at a lot of times these commercial agencies like, oh, they're the big, bad, for-profit organizations. But, you know, everyone's making money, you know, even the municipal ones, like Josh said, still bill. Even if it's to break even sometimes, they're still billing. There's someone's still getting money. Someone's still going to pay for all this, you know. But I think when it comes back to the main topic of this segment here, you know, about, you know, the people that cry wolf and us not, you know, being numb to the more emergent calls because we get so much of it. I think, like Dave said, the important thing is that you've got to treat every patient, you know, as if they're that whatever percentage of legit calls until proven otherwise.
You have to treat every patient as legit regardless of what, if they're proven otherwise or not.
No, I mean,
they're not proven otherwise on the ambulance. It's proven
correct.
In the hospital.
Correct. I mean, back in the day, there used to be an old story, and I think that a lot of places still take this as true. Nobody dies on my ambulance. Right? You pronounce a person dead in the field, you pronounce a person dead in the OR or the ER, but you don't pronounce a person dead in transport.
Some places you do.
Very few. I mean,
When I worked in New Jersey, we could do that.
Yes. So what would you do? To pronounce them dead, turn off your lights and sirens, and continue to trip in?
Pretty much.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, pretty much. You call the doc and you say, hey, this is what's going on. And he would give you, all right, terminate your efforts.
Right. And would the question ever come up, why'd you move them in the first place?
What's that?
Would the question ever come up, why'd you move them in the first place?
I don't know. I actually never did that in the field because I came from the city and I was used to they go to the hospital. It never crossed my mind to pronounce them in the air. I'm already going to the hospital.
Right.
Let the hospital do it.
Right.
You know, but I know other people that would call the hospital and say, hey, you know, this is what's going on. The doc was there, right? Well, stop. You know.
Yep.
And then sometimes they used to make the fatal error of doing it when you were outside in front of the house before we left, and then you'd be stuck in with the body in the back of the ambulance until the cops came and everybody got, you know, took it away. That was good times.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
unless you were rolling.
That's a bureaucratic snafu. I would at least be rolling.
Yeah.
Who would do that? If you
get stuck, you get caught in a moment and you don't realize, and then the doc gives you the order and you're like, oh shit. Now you're stuck in front of the house with the family looking out the window. You know,
that's
not a good time.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Sounds
all right, guys. Listen, I guess we'll end it there. I mean, again, like you said, Josh, we don't have the answers on the show, and I'm hoping that, you know, some of what we talk about is a positive takeaway for the people that listen to it.
No, we do have a lot of opinions, though.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're right or wrong, we have the opinions, and I think they're based on our different levels of experience and time in service and life experiences, and I'm sure the listeners can do the same thing. You might have listeners that listen to this and have a total opposite opinion of what we're saying or what any one of us might be saying, or people that are 100% on board with it. Or people take the total crazy spectrum of, you know, every patient is beautiful and I have to hold their hand and give them a pillow and blow them balloons. And, you know, you get those.
Wait,
those
you don't do that?
Too.
Dave does that.
No, we had a pediatric patient last week, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, and my partner starts blowing balloons up. I'm like, well, luckily it was your call to tech, because he would have got, you know how many balloons you would have got from me? No balloons. That's how many balloons you would have got from me.
And I actually,
it's not a goddamn, it's not Chuck E. Cheese.
You know, there was somebody a while ago was trying to tell me that you can't do that anymore because they're considered
really?
A choking hazard for the child.
That's funny. Well, you know what? I can see that, though. I can see that being like somebody coming with a policy.
It's
that
logical stretch that we're able to attach to things.
Yeah. Oh, he's blown. My partner blew up by two balloons, you know, with the glove. You know, two balloons with the glove. The guy, the kid's like, and the kid's asking for it when we get in the back of the ambulance. Can I get a balloon? Which means that the last time he went to the hospital for the sniffles.
Somebody spoiled him.
Somebody else blew him a freaking glove, a balloon with the glove, and now everything
so
gets in the back of the ambulance.
Making,
he wants a glove balloon. And for his sake, I hope I'm not the one taking the call when he calls, when the mother calls next time he's got the sniffles, and because he's not going to balloon
so
for
what,
me.
So are you saying we're making our own abusers starting from an early age, getting them?
Yes, I am.
We start out with toy balloons, glove balloons,
we are,
and
we
end
are,
up with
we
heroin
are
and
enabling
pain
them. Yes, we are starting out. We are perpetuating the cycle of abuse.
I wonder what the bridge is between
mommy shows them what to do, and the kid sees it. And by the time the kid's 16, 17, they're doing
they're
the same
crack,
shit.
Right.
I don't know about on crack, but they're, you know, they're friggin', you know, breaking my back by, you know, making me come.
I started my habit with hospital gloves, and now I've been on weather balloons.
I started with weather balloons, and now I'm doing hospital balloons. I like the latex, the powder inside the glove.
They don't put powder inside the gloves
anymore. I don't know. The cheap places do. I used to hate that powder in the glove, and you take the glove off, you get the powder on your pants. I used to hate that.
That's because it was donut powder, Jim.
Oh, God. Yeah, no. Fat joke. Thanks. Thanks. It's a constant struggle. All right. Someday you're going to go through it. Okay.
All right. Well, today is the 15th. We usually meet every 2 weeks to put something else in the can for our wanting and deserving audience who are not takers. They're just wanting and deserving.
No, they take plenty.
Any freebie that we give away. What are we doing? Are we going to have a Christmas New Year's special? Are we going to not meet till the new year?
No, I'm sure we'll meet again before the end of the year.
I mean, I'm pretty busy. I don't know about you.
Yeah, me too. Well, we'll play it by ear. I'll let you guys know. And I'm sure the listeners will be hanging on the edge of their seat waiting for our New Year's and Christmas, you know, spectacular.
We should do it with a New Year's countdown.
Yeah.
You mean we won't?
No, I don't think so.
No. No, I'm actually, unfortunately, I'm working. I couldn't get off. They put me on purpose. Of course, they didn't put me on New Year's Day where I could get paid time and a half.
Yeah, I'm working Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, but I'm off New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, thank God, since I work Thanksgiving. So I get one of the holidays off, but probably New Year's Eve I'll be crying myself to sleep, so I won't be able to do the countdown.
Why are you crying yourself to sleep New Year's Eve?
I don't know. I always do.
Oh, stop.
I'm a sad clown.
You have a very nice young lady there now.
I'm a sad clown.
I'm sad busy. Clown. I have a feeling
the tears of a clown.
The tears.
Yes, tears of a clown. Laugh,
no
clown.
Around.
Killer clowns. Yes. Did. Okay. Sorry.
All right, guys. Listen, we'll end it there.
All right.
Anything you guys want to mention before we head out?
I'll mention this to let's say three lucky listeners. If they send an email, if they're listening to this show before the end of the year, will this be published before the end of the year?
Yes.
This show we're on right now. So before the end of the year,
before 2015.
You need to send Jim a email that says, I listened to the show and I want a free wrench. And to the first three people that do that, I'm going to send out a free want new wrench postage paid. You got to also send your address, and Jim will forward it to me.
Well, they can come pick it up, right?
No, they can't come.
Come pick it up.
They actually had that.
Josh, maybe they want a cup of coffee or something.
Exactly.
They want to get their free wrench.
Let them come.
Yeah, they're a taker.
Yes.
They're takers.
Love those takers. Okay.
They want their wrench, and they want their cup of coffee.
So let's do that. Three people who happen to make it all the way through the show listening to this. Send, I want a free wrench. I heard the show. I want a free wrench. Send that in the subject matter, and you will.
What's the email address they're sending it to?
Jim?
They send it to contact@emsofficehours.com.
How about that?
Sounds like a setup. Good.
Yes. Very simple.
That was contact@emsofficehours.com?
Correct.
Okay.
I know. All right, guys. Again, that's our email address. Be sure to send any questions, comments, concerns about the show to that address. Or you can, of course, comment on the blog at emsofficehours.com or even, again, on Facebook. It's facebook.com/emsofficehours. So.